If I had to sum up this entire text in one word, I would have to go with contrast. We have a bit of a scripture sandwich on our hands this morning. We meet a synagogue leader named Jairus, and then we're interrupted with an episode of a bleeding woman's healing, and then we come back to Jairus again. And it's a bit unusual. And all this back and forth, begs a side-by-side comparison, a side-by-side contrast. We have two protagonists, two main characters. The well-off, respected leader of the local synagogue, Jairus, and the poor, anonymous, ceremonially unclean woman defined by the symptoms of her disease, the bleeding woman. And they're about as different as two Jews could possibly be. They have contrasting needs. Jairus comes on behalf of his daughter, and the bleeding woman seeks healing for herself. They have contrasting approaches to meeting their needs. Jairus falls on the ground at Jesus' feet and pleads with him directly, and the bleeding woman discreetly touches the hem of Jesus' robe while he's distracted. And their needs are also met on contrasting time frames. Jairus is put on hold until it looks like it's too late, but the bleeding woman is healed on the spot. And to try to weave together all of this contrast into one unified sermon, I will use contrasting methods of information transmission that appeal to contrasting parts of the brain, speaking and singing. They are both word-based and both have a sort of rhythm and cadence to them, but they are received and processed by the brain differently, and I think it works for the different ways that Jesus interacted with these two contrasting people. The goal of this morning is to find pieces of ourselves reflected in either Jairus or the bleeding woman, and then to allow Jesus to interact with us as he interacted with these two people. And you will probably identify best with one over the other. But to achieve this goal, we need to get inside their heads. So fasten your seatbelts. We're going on a field trip to walk a mile in their shoes. So let's start with the middle of our sandwich, the bleeding woman. We don't know how old she is or if she lives in the area, but we do know that she has had health problems. Some translations specifically name hemorrhages. And these have caused unusual bleeding for the last 12 years. 12 years ago, it was 2004. Where were you in 2004? I won't tell you where I was because that will make you feel old. But actually, I will tell you, I was finishing fourth grade and I was 2 feet tall back then, haven't grown much since. 12 years is quite a chunk of time, is it not? So this woman has been having health problems for 12 years. And she's seen a lot of different doctors. And think of all the medical doctors that you know. And she's seen them all. None of them have been able to do anything to help her. She sold everything that she had and used up all the money on these doctors, and she has nothing left and nothing to show for it. But perhaps the most disheartening thing is that her bleeding makes her ceremonially unclean, according to Leviticus chapter 15. And being unclean has gargantuan implications for social life and any interactions with human beings. She is cut off from all physical touch for 12 years. Her sickness may not be contagious, but her uncleanliness is. So no high fives, no hugs, no shoulder to cry on. For 12 years, she has been flinching away from other people. But being unclean also bars her from public worship. And she is forbidden from entering God's physical house on earth, whether that's the temple in Jerusalem, the local synagogue, the building in which we now sit. She is unwelcome, not according to human rules, according to God's rules. So when Jesus meets her, he sees right through her need for physical healing and feels her deeper root need to be given a face and a voice. She has internalized her disease to the point of habit, and indeed we know her by no other name except the bleeding woman. She has become her affliction. and she needs to be rehumanized. Jesus wants to create a human connection with her, to spend time with her, to get to know her, to publicly acknowledge her as a human with a story rather than avoid her as unclean. That's what she really wants deep down inside, to be a normal human being again. Because while she is still forcing her way through the crowd to get to Jesus, she is a nobody. She is isolated to the nth degree, like a person with leprosy. But unlike a leper, she still lives among everyone else, alone in a town full of people for 12 years. This song is Come My Way by the band Skillet. Hundreds come from everywhere just to see your face and touch the healer's hem. Desperate, I push through the crowd. If I could touch your I could feel your power. Come my way. Come my way. Come my way. Come my way. To ease my pain, just to know your name. Come my way, come my way, come my way, come my way. I'm out of touch, I'm out of reach, I got the strength to believe. I'm out of touch or out of reach, what would it take for you to walk towards me? I'm out of touch, I'm out of reach, but I'm running towards you and it's all I believe. Just a touch. When she was lawfully unwelcome, Jesus welcomed her. When she was marginalized, Jesus made space for her to share her story. And when she felt unworthy to even approach Jesus directly, Jesus declared, "You are worthy, and you have my full attention. Your faith has healed you. Go in peace." Jairus. If you remember my last sermon about Jesus beholding the widow whose son had died, you'll notice a few similarities here with Jairus. And I suppose that because the word behold isn't used in everyday conversation anymore, that the NIV has chosen to leave it out because it's missing an action here again. It should read, "Then behold, a man named Jairus came." And remember, beholding is more than just seeing, it's holding something or someone thoroughly. Jairus was respected in his community as a leader of the local synagogue, and 2,000 years later, we still remember his name. And a name is an important thing, as we heard from Christine last week. So an introduction that says, "Then behold," pay attention, hold this thoroughly, "behold, a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came." That kind of introduction is hardly subtle. In fact, it is in direct contrast to the bleeding woman's unannounced, "I'll just graze his hem and be gone." Jairus has entered the picture, may the world know it. He falls at Jesus' feet and pleads with him to come heal his dying daughter. But just because Jairus' entry into our story has a bit of showmanship, let us not doubt his sincerity. Jairus is begging Jesus to heal his 12-year-old daughter. And let's remember that it's the sons who are the important ones. The sons were the ones who earned an income. The sons carried on the family name. The sons got the inheritance. The sons provided for parents in their old age. Having many children, but especially many sons, was a tangible sign of God's blessing. But Jairus is coming to Jesus on behalf of his daughter, his only daughter, who now lay dying. And she's 12. Are there any girls here this morning who are about 12 or almost 12 or used to be 12? Yep. So imagine that you're dying. How would your dad feel about that? Yeah, he'd freak out, yeah. He'd helpless. How would you feel? You'd feel terrible, right? Thank you. Jairus' daughter is dying, and he falls at Jesus' feet in the dirt. Jairus, respected synagogue leader whose name has been preserved in Scripture, was emotionally wrung out as he lay there in the dust. Jesus needed to come quick or his daughter would die. Time is of the essence. So Jesus and Jairus rush off in the direction of the house, but then, "Oh, hold on a minute, Jairus. I'm in the middle of this large crowd that is threatening to crush me, but I'm pretty sure someone just touched me." The disciples roll their eyes. "Jesus, are you being serious right now? That's ridiculous. There are a bajillion people here." No, someone touched me. I need to know who it was." "My daughter is dying. We don't have time for this, Jesus. We need to go. You said you would heal her." "Cool your jets, Jairus. This bleeding woman has been suffering for 12 years. That's as long as your daughter's been alive. This woman needs some attention. Hold on." Jesus listens intently as the woman then proceeds to tell her whole story, every detail, all the minutiae. Jairus is on pins and needles. With every passing second, this woman continues to talk. His daughter is one breath closer to her last. This bleeding woman has already been healed. Shouldn't Jesus be prioritizing the sick? Don't we call him the great physician? Because it's the sick who need a doctor, not the healthy, right? Jesus is making Jairus wait while his daughter's life is hanging by a thread, and it's excruciating. The woman's finally done, and they're about to go on their way again when Jairus freezes. There, in the crowd, making his way towards them, is a friend's face. A friend's grief-stricken face. And Jairus' heart drops. It's too late, the friend says. Don't bother Jesus anymore. And of all the thoughts that must be swirling in Jairus' head at this moment, could it be Jesus' fault that the girl died? But before Jairus could pursue that thought much farther, Jesus speaks to him. Don't be afraid. Trust me. This is a song I wrote about 2 years ago. As I walk this earth through the wild lands, through the cities that you've made, through the concrete reality as it meets my unknown, and I find you in this clash, in this chasm of understanding, and I meet you as your world is undermined. Eternity meets your passing, my holiness, your impurity. With me, impossible is possible, improbable is likely. Then my eyes rest on your face. When I see you unhindered by time, I see how you were, how you are, how you will be. But my heart stops to see you hesitate. Trust me as I dismantle piece by piece every fiber of your soul to weave it with mine. I know your unknown down to its depths. Relax and rest.
fiber of your soul to weave it with mine. I know your unknown down to its depths.
My life flows on in endless song above Earth's lamentation. I catch the sweet, though far off, hymn that hails a new creation. Through all the tumult and the strife, I hear that music ringing, and it finds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing?